You know, when you respond correctly to dumbass questions, that's what happens.
Welcome to the GabbaCast, the internet's only South Carolina Gamecocks sports podcast in existence that we know of or that we care to know about. I am your host, apologetically yours, through antihistamines and other various cold medication, I am DC3. Alongside me, as always, Sam and Alex. Guys, I'm a little worse for the wear. How are you?
I've had a super busy week, but I'm making it. I'm here, and I'm ready to talk Gamecock football.
Sam?
I'm just glad we're not going to be winless this year. So that's good news.
Hey!
No 1999 repeat up in here.
Could as well far as I would try to have willed that into an existence for, last week, talking about 1999 and Hurricane Dennis and all that other crap, it didn't happen.
We could very well
win a game.
We could very well still have a 1998 repeat, though, because we only have one win so far.
Well, let's hope not.
Well, I mean, we can hope for a lot of things.
Like,
World peace is a good thing to hope for.
Never going to happen.
Or no more sinus infections.
Or a general consensus that coleslaw is kind of average.
I don't hate that idea. I actually only like coleslaw on barbecue sandwiches.
That is its only proper place. Like, that's the only time that it has a seat at the table.
These are facts, and those of you listening who disagree, I will fight you.
You're both wrong. Well, I guess we're going to have a fist fight, Alex.
This is actually a funny thing interestingly enough, my in-laws, my father-in-law used to threaten to take my wife and her sister and brother, if they were ever being bad, they were going to stop at a fast food restaurant that he completely fabricated. But it was called Coleslaw Hut, and they only served bread crusts and coleslaw. And this was the whole premise of this fictitious fast food restaurant that he threatened to take them to if they were bad on a car trip. So
wow. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there are certain coleslaws that I like, but I think it's best when on a barbecue sandwich. So,
I mean, I don't think anybody out there is saying that coleslaw is the main course to a meal. But if you're a person that just throws coleslaw in the trash, then I consider you a very picky eater and kind of ungrateful for the food that's in front of you.
Not saying that coleslaw is going in the trash. I'm just saying that coleslaw ain't played nobody.
And I don't disagree with Sam. All I'm saying is that if we have to have a fist fight, then Patreon users will finally get their live action Royal Rumble match.
Once we figure out how to actually set a Patreon.
No, we're not doing a Patreon.
I just said that word because I hear it on podcasts.
We're not doing Patreon because, like, unlike other Gamecock podcasts, we're not here to rip you off from your money. So.
We are a cash-only establishment.
And by cash-only, we mean no cash.
Right. That's my point. So,
like,
Richard,
we don't have change.
Richard, again.
No, we do not have change for that.
Richard, again, completely misses the point. Cash-only establishment. Yeah, that's the exact opposite of what I'm saying. Oh, my. We're not even 5 damn minutes in.
Crap. Well, this is on brand.
The best show ever.
Alex, you got winners and losers. Let's hear them.
Okay, so you guys are going to have to bear with me on this. But you're going to love my loser. You might love my winner even more. My loser of the week is the good old Tennessee Volunteers. I love it when I have an SEC loser of the week. Because Tennessee Volunteers they may have a Tyson Williams problem. Because Tyson Williams is at his third university. And in his third university, has yet to lose to the Tennessee Volunteers. And what was so great about this weekend is it really was a decent football game, albeit a bad football game, but anytime you have a close game, it's a good football game. It's fun to watch. But not only did he beat Tennessee, he had the game-winning touchdown to beat Tennessee at BYU. BYU, people. So now Tennessee has not only lost to a former Gamecock in Sean Elliott in Georgia State, they have also now lost to Tyson Williams and BYU.
It's the Will Muschamp effect.
It's got to be the Muschamp effect. Now, I want to add to this Tennessee loser of the week with going back to Georgia State last week. Earlier this week, I shared with the GabbaCast group a beautiful, petty Twitter video. Someone in the Atlanta area purchased a video board truck. This truck has the whole side panel of this box truck is nothing but a giant television. On the back of this truck, if you could imagine a U-Haul, the backboard of this truck was painted with the final score of the Georgia State-Tennessee game. On the video side, the two sides of the truck that have the actual television portion of the truck, it played the Georgia State-Tennessee game, obviously in which Georgia State won. And this truck drove around downtown Atlanta for the day, broadcasting this game. This is a level of petty that I can get on board with all day long. And I
love it. That's Atlanta.
Exactly. It was beautiful, and I'm here for it. Now, bear with me on this. Tennessee was my loser of the week. My winner of the week is also the Tennessee Volunteers.
How could that be possible?
This is going to sound crazy, but this is an amazing story. Most people will have already seen it on the Twitters or the Facebook or Snapchat or any form of social media. But there was a young man, a young boy in Florida, who is not very well off, his family does not have a whole lot of money, wanted to support his college team. He is a University of Tennessee Volunteers football fan. He found an orange shirt, obviously not a Tennessee shirt, took a piece of notebook paper and drew out in his own handwriting a UT on his shirt and on his paper and pinned that paper to his shirt, wore it to school. Was bullied all day long for it. This is a super sad situation that a lot of our youth are facing today. It's a terrible thing. His mother posted a picture of it, tagged Tennessee in this photo and said, "Is there any way, my son being a huge Volunteer fan, that you guys could share a shirt with my son so that he would have something at his school that he could be proud of and that he wouldn't be bullied for?" Tennessee took it a step further. Someone in the Tennessee Athletic Department took this notebook paper drawing and basically copied it onto a T-shirt, a Tennessee orange T-shirt with the UT symbol that he had hand-drawn, and put it for pre-order on their website. The shirt sold out within hours. And while at first I thought, oh, Tennessee's just trying to make a profit off of the social media story, all the proceeds are going toward the charity foundation for Stomp Out Bullying. And in addition to that, they sent this young man thousands of dollars worth of Tennessee gear so that he could proudly present his colors at his school any day of the week that he wanted to. So while Tennessee was the loser of the week on the football field, they are the winner of the week for being just good dudes. And those are my losers and winners of the week.
You know, we're all oftentimes about silly business on this show, and don't ever really run or hide or shirk the opportunity to make a good joke out of basically nothing. That's something that makes you feel pretty daggum good at the end of the day. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good story.
To hear that it's going to benefit Stomp Out Bullying is pretty that's pretty awe-inspiring. You know, in other news, you guys have seen the Jeep from Myrtle Beach, right? The floating the beach Jeep. You guys have seen that. Did you guys see where the guy that owns the actual Jeep came forward and the whole story about how his cousin like borrowed the Jeep to go look at the waves and take pictures for his Instagram? Well, so as of today, they started a GoFundMe that's raised tens of thousands of dollars, and they're sending it direct to the Bahamas for Dorian relief. And they're using that Jeep as their platform, so to speak, to promote this. I think it's a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter or whatever it is. They're using that Jeep as their platform. So, I mean, you know what? Even goofy crap that turns into memes on the internet, and like what you were talking about, something that basically turned into a real life meme with this kid, you know, turn it on its ear and do it for good. I think that's pretty awesome. Good on Tennessee, despite the fact that I hope that their Will Muschamp curse continues for forever and for always. Good on them for doing a cool thing out of a bad situation. My winners and losers this week, I'm at a loss because this was a week two week. It really was. It was sort of a snooze fest outside of, you know, Michigan, which could have been super funny. Cal was super funny. And LSU was probably one of the better night games, the headliner night games that we've had in I don't even really know how many. How many weeks. And obviously, it's been a long time since I've been able to enjoy college football. But at least to me, that's one of the most enjoyable weeks that one of the most enjoyable night games on a week two that, and also because the heck with Texas. Speaking of the heck with Texas, my loser was Texas A&M. The other marquee matchup of week two, pitting the number one Clemson Tigers against the allegedly number 12 Texas A&M Aggies. Guys, that was, you want to talk about taking a dump at midfield.
That would have actually been more entertaining than what they did on the field.
It would have been twice as entertaining.
At least they would have actually taken a dump on Clemson's field. That would have been kind of funny.
I mean, yeah, it would have actually added some value to the 3+ hours that all of us spent looking at that. They didn't deserve to score that touchdown. They did not.
Richard,
they scored a touchdown with 10 seconds left in the football
Richard,
game.
Richard, did you have money on the spread?
I did not, but every single person that did, actually ended up catching that cover.
Yeah.
Y'all need to donate that crap to Stomp Out Bullying or Hurricane Dorian. That crap ain't for you, buddy. Ain't your money.
I think Jimbo Fisher had a bet that his team would cover, and he had to make sure that they covered real quick before the end of the game.
Yeah, you got to call your classic touchdown play right there to make sure you cover.
Right.
Without a doubt. You just got to make sure you catch that backdoor action, man.
Got to Pete Rose that thing, dude.
Ooh.
Ooh. Sorry, Pete.
Carumba. I mean, it's just all that hooting and hollering and all that bull crap at Texas A&M about competing for a national title, and they laid an egg all over Memorial Stadium on Saturday. They punted more times than Congress did last week. But
yet, but how did they do that? How did they have, what did they, punt the ball? They punted the ball nine, I think they punted the ball nine times. But how in the hell did you punt the ball nine times and Kellen Mond still threw for 431 yards? And y'all only put up 10 points?
He didn't throw
that. And seven of those 10 points were in the last 10 seconds of the football game? Good grief,
y'all. Hold on, fact check. He didn't throw for 431 yards.
How many yards did he throw for?
The entire offense didn't crack 300.
Where did I get that from?
Probably last year's Clemson game when he actually did have a good game. Just fact.
Let's just go back to remembering good times.
We want to be somewhat factual here, just a little bit. It's okay.
In all fairness, I am kind of operating on a little bit of cold medication, so that could.
I know. I'm just saying that.
It could be true. All right. Anyways, they punted nine times and they only scored it with the last 10 seconds remaining. And you know, while granted, they did force Clemson to punt. Let's see, five times during the game, which is something I believe that not a whole lot of other Power Five schools have forced the Clemson Tigers offense to do in recent memory. They just looked like they weren't supposed to be there. They looked like a daggum scholarship game. They were just out there going through the motions. Y'all, Jimbo on the sideline when he goes back and forth between having his reading glasses on and taking them off and putting his hand over his eyes to shield the sunlight from, like, looking like a dad trying to read the paper out by the pool. That whole charade is just nightmarish. And I feel sorry for the Texas A&M fans that put $150 million dollars behind him because it was not money well spent.
They're paying a lot of money to maintain the same record they had every year under Kevin Sumlin. You know?
Bingo.
They're paying a lot of money to not get any better than they were under the previous coach. So.
And at least Kevin Sumlin had the sense to wear a hat with a brim on it so he could see in the sunlight.
Jimbo,
and wear contacts on game day.
Jimbo won one national title, and he's become the most overhyped, overrated coach in college football.
He is Ernest coaches college football.
Yes, and won a title with a quarterback that pretty much any coach in that position would have won a title.
Right. Yeah, he, and to be fair, he almost screwed that one up too.
Yeah. He tried to.
You want to know who didn't? Well, I didn't. Speaking of screwing up, the most entertaining football game of the week, Minnesota tried. Minnesota tried their darndest against Fresno State to screw this one up. But from the Goldie Gopher helmets to the holy mackerel of a mess of a football game, to P.J. Fleck wearing a Heinz mustard-colored pullover over the top of a shirt and tie and still managed to wear tennis shoes, God bless you. Antoine Winfield Jr. secures an interception at the end of the game to hold off Fresno State. That was a super silly football game. Minnesota is not necessarily inclusive in this. Fresno is, though, so I get to say that West Coast football after dark is back, and oh my God, how I have missed you.
Was that at Fresno State, or was that at Minnesota?
It was at Minnesota.
Okay, because I remember them playing, I thought they played at a weirdly
late
hour.
They played super late.
Are you sure it was at Minnesota?
I'm fairly certain that it was at Minnesota. But they played super late. Yeah, their kickoff was at like 8 o'clock.
I was just trying to figure out why they kicked off so late if they were. I mean, I believe you. I'm just saying most of the time when they kick off that late, it's out west.
Don't ever believe me for anything.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say that I believe it was at. I think it was at See, I think it was in California. My fault.
Okay, so was that Fresno State?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Is it my turn?
So even still, yes, your turn. Okay. Save us, Sam.
All right, so I had trouble with my loser of the week until I came across this gem of a tweet from Nevada University Sports Network. Obviously, if you can't gather from that title of that Twitter account, they cover Nevada University's sporting events. So Nevada, coming off an upset of Purdue last week, and I don't say that tongue-in-cheek. Purdue was actually favored in that game, and Nevada beat Purdue. That was a big win for Nevada. Went out to Oregon, played at Oregon last night, and they got a stop early to force a field goal. And at the time, it was nothing. There's about 10 minutes or so left in the first quarter. And Nevada, you know, they just got to stop inside the red zone and force a field goal. And they tweeted a video of the pass breakup, and they tweeted out, and I quote, "Nevada's defense is hungry," all caps tonight. The hungry is all caps. Exclamation point, exclamation point. They then proceeded to give up 77 points and lose 77-6. Don't tweet that your defense is hungry tonight if you're about to give up 77 points. And for those of you who don't know, like, we scored 72 against Charleston Southern. Nevada's an FBS team with a in the Mountain West with a pretty, like, for a, with a halfway decent program. Like, most of the time they're in bowl games. Okay, so it's not like Oregon beat up on some, like, second-tier FCS team from, you know, Washington. Awesome. I mean, they beat the crap out of a legitimate FBS school, and they almost hung 80 on them. Of course, that's not the point. The point is they tweeted out, "Our defense is hungry tonight," and then Oregon broke the basketball scoring record on them, but in football.
Well, hear me out here. Maybe they were just being super literal about this. They played Oregon in Eugene. Maybe the entire first string was literally like, "Man, you know, we are super hungry. We're just gonna leave and go to
Burger King." And y'all,
I mean,
y'all
got I really can't speak to the food options in Eugene, Oregon.
I'm making a generic statement about where they could have gone to eat. I'm fairly certain they would have a Burger
Arby's.
King out in Oregon. No.
Arby's?
No. Never go to Arby's. Arby's is terrible. Arby's is awful. They have gone so far downhill the last few years. They're awful.
But they have the meats.
And curly fries.
Yeah, they're cold all the time. Okay, I'm not. Okay, Colorado is my winner of the week. Hey, I'm talking about my winner of the week. Hush.
All right, winner. Winner of the week.
Colorado is my winner of the week. Okay, down 17-0 at halftime at home, allegedly, because I'm pretty sure Nebraska fans bought more tickets to that game than Colorado fans did. So they were playing on their home field, but it was pretty close to a 50-50 split in the crowd. Anyway, Colorado's down 17-0 at half into the third quarter, down 17-7. And then they just, like, they look like the Undertaker in that, you know, the GIF where he just, like, sits up and he's all of a sudden alive. They went off in the fourth quarter in overtime. They outscored Nebraska. They rallied. They outscored them 27-14 down the stretch. They threw a game-tying 26-yard touchdown pass with 46 seconds left, ended up winning in overtime when the Nebraska kicker shanked a 50-yard field goal attempt on. I felt bad for that kicker because it was his second career field goal attempt ever. And the kicker and the head coach was like, "All right, kid, go out there and hit a 45, 50-yarder, tie it, send it to second overtime." And then he wasn't even in the same zip code as the uprights. So Colorado Buffaloes and anybody that caught the second half of that game, which I did, and it was wildly entertaining. And I would argue, Richard, I didn't see Minnesota Fresno State, but I would argue that Colorado Nebraska was right up there probably with Minnesota Fresno State in terms of entertaining.
So that, it was Minnesota Fresno State was just turnover laden.
Gotcha. Okay. Now this this was kind of turnover laden, but it was just that game was the epitome of college football. You know,
speaking of good games, I would be remiss if I didn't even mention how close we were to seeing Florida State starting 0-2. They should have lost to ULM, and that kicker just missed the extra point in overtime.
Yeah, I felt bad for him, but at the same time, not really, because, dude, you're on scholarship to make those kicks.
Got to make that kick.
It's an extra point. It's not like he missed a 45-yard field goal. He missed an extra point, and he missed it badly.
You could just watch the overtime series, sans kicks, and realize that ULM was a better football team than Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
Willie Taggart probably should have been fired that night.
And I think he probably would have been if they had lost. Yeah. I still think the way they lost to Boise State and then almost losing to ULM, I still think that's a fireable offense.
Yeah, he may get fired before the season's out.
Would not shock me at all.
You know, and interestingly enough, like, you know, for example, with the Willie Taggart thing, and then, like, what you were talking about, Sam, with Colorado just rising from the dead. Interestingly enough, that Undertaker match with Brock Lesnar, the Undertaker rose up, but ultimately lost that game.
Well, I didn't know that. I just know that.
I didn't know that until just a second ago.
Okay. Well, that defeats the entire.
I thought he won.
Metaphor. So.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, still, getting up.
All right, Alex, talk about Charleston Southern.
So we obviously know that Charleston Southern is not a good football team. They got railed by Furman last week, and I mean, we all saw what happened and transpired this past week. But what was fun to see, even as bad as they were, we actually made plays. And I, maybe with the exception of one game, maybe two, cannot remember a time in any coaching era since I have been around that we've just run up the score on a bad opponent. In fact, I can remember saying to multiple people throughout the years that, man, I would love to have a game like Bama or have a game like Auburn or Oklahoma where we just play a bad opponent and we are able to hang 70 or 80 points on them like these guys do. And we've never done that. You know, we always do the Furman, like, or the Citadel 48-8 or lose to the Citadel. Or, you know, we play some sub-tier team and we're only able to put up 35 on them. So to see us hang up 72 points was incredible. Helinski, while I'm not saying this guy is the savior of South Carolina, was actually making throws. He was putting the balls in spots on time. He was getting rid of the ball, and the receivers weren't open. He was hitting the check down right away. He wasn't hanging on to it. Fun to watch us make some plays, and the guys seemed really excited. I think it was a great bounce back, and I really felt like Muschamp had the feeling that he could not take the foot off the gas, even though it was Charleston Southern. And with good reason. The way we played against North Carolina, I felt like the way we were playing, that if Muschamp could have hung 100 on those guys, he would have. You know, and I know there's a lot of Twitter talk about Harris, a running back. Listen, here's what I'll say. He's a 600-pound squatting beast. I'm not saying, please do not take that as me saying that he is going to upseat Rico Dowdle or Tavian Feaster or even Mon Benson. But it's exciting to see some of the future guys being able to do the things that he was able to do. I felt like he moved well. I felt like he ran behind his pads and knocked guys over, albeit walk-ons. But it was just a real fun game. It was fun to see that we have the ability to do those things. And it was fun to kind of see the guys have some excitement for a little bit. And obviously a super special start for Ryan Helinski and his family. To see a number three trot out on the field and play like that for their whole family. So it was a fun game, I think, all around.
You know, more on the Kevin Harris thing, one thing I really like about him is when we go in that kind of that jumbo I formation thing, he's the fullback. So
right.
It gives you – it's not just – you got to account for him because it's not like he's a non-threat. He's not just a blocking fullback. I mean, he could – easily get the football and rip off 5-7 yards just because it's a quick fullback dive and it just happens so quickly. The defense is, you know, I remember back in 2012, LSU killed us with that down there in Baton Rouge. They just kept handing it to the fullback and we couldn't get our arms around him quick enough to get him down to the ground, and he would get 4 or 5 yards per carry. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm with you there on Kevin Harris. I think he's going to have an exciting future going forward next 3 or 4 years. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
And it's wild to consider that Kevin Harris has now joined Marcus Lattimore as the only other South Carolina running back, true freshman, scored 3 touchdowns in a football game in history. It's those two. Wow. And after last week, you know, last week you've got a situation where Mon Denson didn't even have any touches last week, let alone Kevin Harris. So, you know, I don't know what the heck is happening. Was last week in my optimistic side of my head an outlier insofar as it just was a week one thing where sloppiness and not tying the bow on the package led to a loss that never should have happened? You know, time will tell. But all I know is whatever happened yesterday wasn't terrible in my book. And the defense still kind of looked like crap at times. And specifically, I'm still going to call out the defensive secondary. They still had issues, not necessarily with route assignment, but with taking angles for tackles on mid-range passes. Charleston Southern was able to move the ball fairly efficiently on passes thrown somewhere between 5 and 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Some of the longer, deeper balls weren't really in play. The shorter balls they were better on. But anything, you know, kind of 5 to 10 yards out, if you want to call that a mid-range pass, then so be it. But there's not a whole lot else in terms of fault to find on that team. That was, you know, that just looked like a football team that put up 700 plus yards of offense and shattered all sorts of records. Yeah, it's against Charleston Southern, but, you know, when you put Charleston Southern in their bucket, it's not like that's the worst football team on planet Earth. Their Big South competition is not horrible. They're obviously an inch shorter, 25 pounds lighter. It's all of the trappings of a lower tier program, but, you know, the Gamecocks just looked like they were ready to come play football. I think that it would have been very interesting to see. Now, obviously, next week is going to be its own thing, but they played like a team that was trying to prove something, and I hope that they continue that feel and that fit for the remainder of the season.
I mean, shit, they need to play that every week because they still haven't proved anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. That's true. I mean, and so, pair that in with what you're going to say, Sam, because I think that we're both kind of on the same wavelength.
Well, I am going to start off by saying, you know, Richard, you say they're not the worst team on the planet Earth, and you're right, they're not, but they're pretty bad. I mean, they're a bad FCS team. I don't see them winning a whole lot of ball games at that level. They don't have a whole lot of athletes, and they're pretty slow, and they're not all that strong, and they're a pretty bad team. That being said, I'm not going to ever argue with our football team scoring 72 points against anybody. Holinsky looked great, again, against an inferior opponent, so I'm not anointing him as a savior, kind of like what Alex and Richard alluded to. We're not doing that. But it was his first live college competition. He looked very comfortable. He was in command of the offense. His passes got out on time. And you could see him going through his progression. I was actually at the game, and I sat in the end zone, and you could see him looking, reading the defense. He wasn't locked on one receiver. He was going all the way through 1, 2, 3, 4 through his progressions, and then he would hit the check down. It was just nice to see the ball get out on time, receivers being able to catch the ball in stride, not have to contort their body to make catches and worry about getting killed over the middle with a high pass. There was really only one throw where I felt like the ball was put in danger, and it was picked off. Of course, he was hit on that throw as he threw it. I'm not making excuses for him, but that was the play. I think it happened maybe in the second half.
Yeah.
I think that was actually his last pass attempt. That was his last play. After that, he didn't go back in. But, hey, I think he had three touchdowns total, maybe four.
Yep.
He threw a great long ball to Brian Edwards. I'm sure Brian Edwards was relieved to finally have a post route thrown where he could catch it in stride and just sprint to the end zone. And I thought it was good to get DeCarrion Joyner more reps at quarterback in a game. I know we got some last year against Chattanooga, but it was good to see him. We have got to keep getting him on the field at both wide out and quarterback. He's got to play quarterback some this year. I mean, that guy is an absolute – he is lightning in a bottle when he has the football in his hands. He's one of those guys that he could house it at any time when he's in space. He's that kind of athlete.
Yeah,
exactly. We have got to get – I'm not saying start him at quarterback. I think Helinski is entrenched as a starter. But we need to have a plan every single week to get DeCarrion Joyner snaps at quarterback. And what I loved is when the first time he came in at quarterback, I think it was either the first or early second quarter, he came out, and not only was he on the field, but both Feaster and Dowdle were on the field at the same time. It was a dual halfback package with Joyner back there. So, I mean, you got three legitimate ground options back there, and then you got Shai Smith in the slot. I mean, I just think there's a lot you can do with that creatively with your offense. I think that's, you know, and it gives defensive coordinators something else to account for. Anyway, it was good to see him play well both as a quarterback and as a receiver. I thought he did a lot of good things as a receiver. We got to find a way to get Shai Smith involved more, I think, but that'll come in time. Everyone got to play. No serious injuries as far as I know, unless y'all have heard something else. You know, it was a good day. It was one of those games that it played out like you think it should play out every time you play a team like Charleston Southern. Obviously, it doesn't work out that way all the time. But, you know, when you play a team like that, that's how it should go when there's that big of a talent disparity. So it was just – and I will say this. One thing that I thought of is you with the way we played – you would not have known, like, if you didn't know any better, you wouldn't have known that team took an absolute gut punch against North Carolina last week with the way they responded, which I thought that was very important. They came out and they clearly, yes, it's disappointing, all that stuff, but they clearly flushed it. They were over it. There was no hangover, which we've seen in the past. We've seen hangover games turn into something else. So that was good, but hopefully they can flush this one and get ready for Alabama. Speaking of which, Alex, what are your thoughts on Bama?
I mean, realistically, we should absolutely get rolled. Bama is, they're just a tier above where we are, and, you know, that's just the way it should look. However, you know, I go back and look at our game against Clemson last year. I look at our ability and our talent level that we should be able to score. And crazier things have happened. You know, I look back at 2010. We were an inferior opponent, and we just shocked the world. So while I say that we should get rolled, my hope is that we don't. And that, I mean, I think every Gamecocks fan is hoping that we don't. But I think it's a legitimate possibility that we can win, but it's probably not a legitimate probability that we will win. I think if we control the clock, we really buy into the quick passes, you know, that are surefire completions, those 3 to 4 yard gains, we may have a chance. If we keep it close, you know, you have a chance. If you're down, I think if you're down 17 at halftime, you're probably out of it. But if we're within 10 at half and keep it right around there by the end of the third, you've given yourself a chance.
You know, I mean, we're a 24-point underdog for a reason. You know, the Tide are a national championship quality football team right now. Are they ranked number one in the country like they were in 2010? No, they're not. But they are the odds-on favorite to have the, you know, the inside track to a national championship berth. We have an unproven quarterback and one really good wide receiver. That does sound a hell of a lot like 2010, to be quite honest. I'm not trying to put words in anybody's mouth, but there is the opportunity here to get on the right side of momentum. I mean, we already saw, so, you know, despite the fact that now, hear me out here, despite the fact that the scoreline against Duke eventually went the other way, and the game was not even anywhere close to being close, but, you know, that this team doesn't look, at least to me, watching through the first couple of games, doesn't look like the same bludgeoning Death Star of a rotating talent pool of five-star talent that it has in the past. There's something that's just kind of weird. Just with the glaring exception being Tua Tagovailoa, like,
well,
that's a special football player. It just seems like some of the stuff that's around him isn't as good as it has been in Alabama past.
Richard, it's all, and I hate to say it because I hate Clemson. I hate them so much. But it's true. It's almost like the way Clemson beat them in that national title game, like, showed a giant crack in Alabama's armor. And they're not nearly as intimidating, like, for, I don't know if intimidating is the right word, but for just like
shook a little bit.
For your average fan to, like, your average fan of the opposing team when they're playing Alabama this year, it's like, well, Clemson beat them by 30. Why can't we beat them by one? You know, that whole
thing. Yeah, it's like there's hope all of a sudden.
Right. They're not the death machine that's just rolling over everybody. So, yeah.
Anyway, I mean, that being said, we got to, like Alex said, we got to control the clock. That's been a thing that's, I mean, and that's going to show up. I mean, you could even see it after, you know, after the defense played, you know, not even 75 snaps against Charleston Southern. You know, that's going to be an afternoon game in Columbia. It's going to be hotter than holy crap. And, you know, that defense is going to have to be able to get off the field at some point, and the offense is going to have to be able to stay on the field. So that's a tall task to cover against any Alabama team, let alone an Alabama team of the last 5-6 years. So that's going to depend a whole lot on a balanced, layered look on offense. You know, I think that one of the big takeaways from this past week was that offensive look, like Sam, you mentioned, with Dak Joyner, and you've got Rico and Tavian Feaster on the field at the same time with Shai Smith lined up in the slot. That's the layered look where you have options that really, to me, thus far in the BMAC era, I haven't seen a whole lot of that, where the play is basically telegraphed from the beginning before the ball is even snapped. there were a lot of times yesterday that I was genuinely like, oh, cool, I like the way that looks, I haven't seen that before. Yeah, you're pulling out all the stops against a very overmatched FCS opponent, but that's the kind of stuff you got to do to pull out all the stops against arguably one of the best two or three teams in the country.
You gotta do it every week.
We got to look like that all the time because that's just what good football looks like. So, you know, you take it from here, Sam. They showed me once, but you got to show me again when it actually matters.
So we talk about controlling the clock, and I see where y'all are coming from, but controlling the clock doesn't necessarily win football games because you can hold the ball for 40 minutes and score 13 points. Okay?
Yeah.
If we have the ball, I'd be interested to see, and I'm just using this as a reference point, how much time possession we had against Clemson last year when we rolled up 600-something yards of offense at Clemson.
It was like 23 minutes.
So if we had the ball for less than half of that game. So I'm not saying that it's the exact same situation. I would much rather roll up 600 yards of offense, score 30-plus points with 23 minutes of possession than have the ball for 40 minutes and struggle to put it in the end zone.
You're absolutely right. Shit, Tennessee had a 10-play drive this past week that ended in a punt.
Possession has no correlation to winning football games unless you're running the triple option. Unless you're a service academy running triple option. That's just my opinion. I think in modern football, it did back in the 90s and early 2000s, but I think in modern football, it's so much more about having explosive plays than it is about controlling the football. Look, controlling the football is why Muschamp got fired from Florida. That's why he got fired.
Sat on it.
Because he was playing ball control, and he wasn't playing modern football. No, you come out against Alabama with an offensive game plan to go balls to the wall for 60 minutes, and you're a hurry-up offense, and you're on the football, and you're playing 100 yards vertically in, 53 and a half yards horizontally? Is that how wide a football field is? Something like that? I mean, you're using every square inch of the football field to make Alabama's defense defend you, and you are on the football. And if that means you go three and out, so be it. But there's no reason to play chicken and play scared against this team. But that's not how you beat teams like Alabama. You don't play not to lose. You play to win. That's how you pull upsets, is you be aggressive, and you take shots, and you put your players in position to make plays, and you get the ball spread around to all these athletes. I mean, guys, we have athletes on offense. There's no reason that we can't move the football against Alabama. I'm not predicting 35, 40 points and 600 yards of offense, but I think if our guys if the coaches will put together a good game plan, and then our offense will execute that game plan, and if we can make adjustments when need be, I think we should have the opportunity to move the football and score points. We've got to figure out a way to stop Alabama on defense. And I don't know that we have Richard, you spoke to it a little bit earlier with the secondary. I'm going to take it one step further as far as being a little bit more specific. I don't know that we have in the secondary the safety play right now. And then if you're looking at the linebacking core, I don't know that we have the linebackers and the safeties to stop Alabama's offense. Our linebackers have been a liability for the last 2.5 years. I can understand why, because Coleman Hutzler's the coach, and if y'all ever seen a video of that guy talk, you can't understand a word he says. So it's no wonder our linebackers suck, because they can't understand what he's telling them.
I'm not laughing at him, but I kind of am.
His voice is so annoying. It's terrible. That's sidetracked. We have got to find a way to contain Tua And I think, really, Alabama's offense has kind of evolved. I think, yeah, they still have good running backs, you know, but I think their biggest weapon is probably their wideouts. Their biggest weapon outside of Tua Tagovailoa. They become so much more of a spread team where they get the ball on the perimeter to their wide receivers and they stretch it vertically, and they're no longer, you know, in the single back formation under center going power, 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 play action over the top. I mean, that whole Greg McElroy offense has been out the window for several years now. So I'll be interested to see how we play defensively. I think we have the capability to move the ball on them if we come out with an aggressive game plan and really get after them on offense. But we're not going to win this game by sitting on the football and shortening the game. I mean, you don't have anything to lose. You're a 22-point underdog, 24-point underdog. What do you have to lose? Just go balls to the wall and play football. And, guys, if we're going to lose by 20 points, I'd rather score 40 points doing it, you know?
I agree with that.
I'd rather lose 60 to 40 than lose 20 to nothing.
Heck yeah.
You know, at least
without a doubt.
At least you had a little bit of fun doing it, you know?
Speaking to that, what do you think? All right, so hypothetically on Saturday, what do you think a win, if the win isn't winning the actual football game, what do you think a positive outcome is?
What is a positive? Like a moral victory?
And I think you've already kind of alluded to what yours is.
Like a moral victory? Well, I don't think. Now, okay, don't get me wrong. I don't think losing by 20 at this point in the season with a healthy team can ever be quantified as a moral victory. I would take like a 10-point loss or less like a 2-touchdown loss or less as a moral victory, where I felt like we were competitive throughout the ball game, and it, you know, one or two different plays go differently, man, we're right there. Considering we have a freshman quarterback and we just lost to UNC 2 weeks ago. I mean, if all that happens and we end up losing, I'd be like, okay, well, you can see progress. Now, if you're going to get that far, though, and be that competitive, you might as well just win the damn football game. You know?
There you go.
That's my – but, no, I get what you're saying. It's kind of like what Alex said, though. I forget how you phrased it, Alex. I don't expect us to win, to have a realistic shot to win, but I'm not counting it out. You know, because anything can happen, and me personally, I think we have the horses on offense to score on them enough to win the game if our defense shows up.
Okay.
So, but am I predicting us to win? Absolutely not. Because I'm also like you, Richard, I'm done with the whole tell me thing. Don't tell me. Shut up and show me.
Show me.
Show me. I'm tired. Look, I'm tired of all the hype videos, all the coach talk, the coach speak. I don't care about that stuff anymore. Do it on the field on Saturday afternoons. Do it on the field. That's what I'm worried about. I could care less about our battle armor hype videos on Thursday nights anymore. Win a damn football game. And I'm not that person that's saying, well, the players need to stop worrying about being in the videos. I know they're not in the videos. That's not my point. My point is, if you want to get fans re-engaged with the program, it's not going to be done through Twitter and Facebook. It's going to be done through results on the scoreboard. That's where we are as a fan base. That's reality.
Now we're talking.
Speaking of Saturday afternoons, Alex, what do you think we wear? Saturday afternoon.
I think we'll go back to the old school Spurrier, Garnet, Garnet, Garnet. The all reds coming out on fire.
There you go. I like it. Alex? Richard? Sorry.
I mean, you know, I want to say Garnet everything as well, but I'm sticking to my original theory that you and I talked about last week. If You have to win in the uniform you lost in before you can wear something else. So everybody's going to be wearing 2-week-old stinky stormtrooper get-ups.
Oh, so the whole thing is not only do you wear the same uniforms, you can't even wash them.
You can't wash them. You got to wear the same. You got to wear the uniform until you win in it.
You got to come out with the grass stains and everything.
Everything. The whole thing.
That's some super superstitious stuff right there.
That's one way. That's a good way to get staph infection.
Yes. You know what? That is how you get ants.
I'm a little bit like y'all, though, in all seriousness, but I'm going to go... Okay, so my uniform predictions, me personally, they're less of... I don't know about y'all. And I may have said this before. I don't know. But it's less of what I think we're going to do and it's more of what I'd like to see us do. I'd like to see us go garnet helmets, garnet shirts with white pants. I think that would look pretty sharp. But
white shoes?
Yes, white shoes.
I'm a big fan.
White shoes with garnet trim and garnet socks.
You know, I should correct what I said earlier. I said the old Spurrier get-ups, and then I said garnet. I meant, like, garnet everything, but the old Spurrier get-ups, I mean white lids, garnet everything else.
Gotcha. Garnet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay.
X-Factor players of the game. What we got, Alex?
I'm going to say the O-line. The O-line has got to have a good game. I think part of the big issue against North Carolina was that we could not give Bentley any time to throw the football. And even when we did, I mean, obviously he wasn't making great decisions. But I feel like in order for us to have any kind of a fighting chance, the O-line has got to give our running back some lanes, and they got to give Helinski time to get the ball down the field.
You know, and to your point, I think, like, if the O-line for at least the first half of North Carolina O-line was – O-line was knocking them back. That was not the case in the second half, obviously.
Yeah, well, so, and then North Carolina made adjustments, and we didn't.
Exactly, 100%. And I feel like that the intensity dropped off at some point in time. That's neither here nor there. You know, I 100%, Alex, I think that that's a humongous key. I'm going to call Jam Williams out. I want to see that kid ball. But to Sam's point, the linebackers and the safety position, that whole entire defensive secondary unit needs to be on its BS this weekend.
They need to play the game.
In order for that football game to play.
They got to play the games of their life this weekend.
Every single one of them. Not a soul. Second team, third team, first team. Don't care who you are. Not going to single a person out. I already did, though. But linebackers and safeties, you boys better be ready.
All right. So I'm going to go. I wrote down Javon Kinlaw. So specifically, I'm going with Javon Kinlaw because I think no matter what happens on the scoreboard, I think like on a personal level, he's going to be a bright spot for us. I think he's going to show out and show up and make some plays. And I just want to say, I was sitting in the stands against Charleston Southern game last weekend, or yesterday, I guess, and people were talking. It was like the first play of the game where Javon fired off the ball, did a swim move, and got into the backfield and dropped it for a loss. And the first thing was I had like five crusty old white people around me that had probably never played sports before yelling about how Javon Kinlaw didn't do that last week. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, Javon Kinlaw was one of the only bright spots on our defense against North Carolina. So stop trashing Galactus because he's been good all year. I mean, it's only been two games, but he's been good for us all season. He's played well, you know. He's done his part. So I'm going to go with him, but to be less specific, like, if we're talking about keys to the game, the defensive line has got to whip Alabama up front. Got to whip them. I mean, man oh man, got to whip them. That's how you beat Alabama. You got to win on line scrimmage. Got to win up front. So Alex with the O line and me with the D line, and then Richard hit on the linebackers and the safeties. If we can win, I personally think if we can win in those three areas, I think we probably win the ball game. But I don't see that happening.
If y'all in the trenches.
Yeah. So if you can win on both lines of scrimmage, and then our linebackers and safety show up and play really well, I think we're going to like the result Saturday afternoon. That being said, I do not expect all three of those things to happen consistently enough for us to win that ball game. We do have Twitter questions and comments. Some are comments, some are questions. So we're going to start off with Chuck Hendricks. He has his – I love this. He has his own winners and losers that he wants to share with us. I love that. His winner is Tyson Williams, former Gamecock. Tyson Williams, we talked about that. That's awesome. And then apparently Chuck – or Alex, you and Chuck are on the same wavelength. I don't know if y'all grabbed a beer last night or something, but his losers are the Volunteers. And then Alex, he goes, the new Baylor, question mark. So, I don't know. We'll see going forward. He said also his sub-losers are people who are hyping Dino Babers as the next head coach. For those of you who don't know, Dino Babers is the head coach at Syracuse, and they lost 63-20 to Maryland Saturday. The bigger crime, I think, with that, and y'all might appreciate this, everybody remembers John Hoke, right?
Alex, yes. Richard.
John Hoke is the defensive coordinator for Maryland.
No way.
It is a
really?
Crime.
God.
It is a crime to only score 20 points against a John Hoke defense.
That's true. God, couldn't stop air.
Let me check that, because I'm pretty sure he is, but... You know, if he's not, I don't want to. Yes, he's the defensive coordinator for Maryland. So,
wow.
And they only scored 20. Supposedly, Dino Babers, a defensive or an offensive guru, only managed 20 points against John Hoke's defense. So, you know, whatever. Keith Stone, we talked about this a little bit. Okay, well, first off, his loser of the week is the city of Miami. After both their football teams failed miserably. Talk about the Miami Hurricanes, and then I'm assuming the Miami Dolphins for losing like 59-10. He also said the crying Texas kid could be his loser of the week. Did y'all see the Texas LSU game?
Okay.
So what? So what I love about the crying Texas kid is he's like 12 years old, surrounded by a bunch of adults, and he's letting the F word fly like every two or three words. And he's crying his eyes out. It's fantastic. I just think it's hilarious. Okay, so Alex and Richard, Keith's question is, how can this team show progress this weekend against Alabama?
I think if we're able to move the ball down the field successfully and at least get Bama to, you know, two or three stops, and by stops I mean like they punt the ball and they give it back to us. You know, I feel very unsuccessful defensively if they have a scoring drive every time they touch the football. But if we're able to get three or four stops and show that we're able to kind of contain their offense a little bit, I feel a lot better about our defense.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Richard?
You know, I also shout out one of our faithful listeners that is Twitterless, Bulldog Cocky. I think that his question kind of falls in line tangentially to this. That this past week in the show comments, it said if Helsinki and the Gamecocks beat Charleston Southern 52-17, do they have a realistic quotation marks shot at Alabama? I think that the realistic shot comes from just exactly like what you said, which is there has to be every single defensive position play the game of its life on Saturday. And that goes in tandem with being able to flip the field a couple of times, get the ball turned over, and be able to capitalize on momentum plays. So I really feel like in order to have a realistic shot at all against Alabama, it's going to have to require a whole lot of pixie dust, but at the same time, a unified team effort on defense.
You know, and I think another thing that maybe we're not talking about enough in this upcoming Bama game is, how is Alinsky going to look against his first legitimate competition?
Exactly.
Back to that point of what can be done to show progress, I'm going to be watching him to see. I don't expect him to be, because I think he's a pretty mature kid. And, you know, I think with everything he's been through, I don't expect him to be overwhelmed by much, because he's faced far more serious issues in his life than playing against a pretty good college defense. But I want to see how he responds in that environment in front of a packed house against arguably one of the top defenses in the country, in his second ever college football game. So I think if he seems like he's in control and he's pretty productive against them, I think that could be a potential, you know, if we were to lose, that could be a potential silver lining going forward. It's like, hey, we might really have something here with a quarterback, you know. So Cam wants to know, can we expect any of yesterday's offensive explosion to carry over? I don't think realistically. I mean,
probably not.
Now, if you're talking about like play calling and general execution, I would love to see that. Now, in terms of pure production, absolutely not, because it's just a different caliber of player. But I think Cam knows that. We also talked about this. Also thoughts on running occasional change of pace quarterback with Dak Joyner. We talked about that pretty extensively earlier. And then he says, okay, so there's this other thing. It's a screenshot from the Helinski's Hope website. It says, hey, gang, or for those of you who don't know, Helinski's Hope is a foundation that Ryan Helinski's family started after his brother committed suicide. It's about mental health awareness. It says, hey, Gamecock fans, as many of you know, mental health awareness and support has become very big on campus due to recent events. In support of Ryan and his family, one of our fans suggested that everyone should stand for the first play of the third quarter and hold up the number 3 in the air. Everyone helped spread the word about this idea. We want to get everyone to be a part of this during the Alabama game. Thanks, y'all. And I'm fairly certain that his brother, Ryan's brother, Tyler, also wore the number 3 at Washington State. So I think if you're at the football game, and I'll embed this in the podcast notes when I publish it, but if you're at the football game, definitely take part in that. I think that could be hopefully become a pretty cool tradition at Carolina football games. I think that would be...
I love that kind of stuff.
Like our version of the Iowa people waving at the cancer kids in the hospital.
I can't get enough of that.
I think that could be, you know, our version of that. And I think that would be very, very cool. Locke in the Cockpit kind of has a smart-ass question about Jake Bentley. When is the last time you saw Jake Bentley throw an accurate out route because Ryan can? Anybody want to take that one?
I don't mind taking this. I mean, obviously, you know, Jake Bentley has thrown his fair share of accurate out routes. I know that we're all kind of, you know, we're all excited about Helinski, but Jake Bentley has done some great things for this program. He's done some things that, you know, some of us were less than happy with. But at the same time, he has done a lot for this program and was on a record-setting pace for our program. At the same time, we have learned today, being Sunday, that Jake is going to have surgery, which will be season-ending, and we feel for him and his season and his career going forward, and just, you know, hope for a swift recovery for him and whatever future endeavors he has.
You know, we're not that far away football-wise from having that kid throw for 500-plus yards at Clemson. So,
exactly.
I'm pretty sure at least, if we're going to be smart-ass about this, I'm pretty sure at least one of those passes was an out route that was thrown accurately. So,
yeah.
You know, people love to bash on Jake, but you can make an argument that Muschamp's first 2 years, if Jake Bentley's not here, we probably don't go to a bowl game. So, and I would argue that for his second year, too. I don't think we win 9 football games without Jake Bentley playing quarterback for us. So I'm not here for the Jake Bentley bashing thing. I don't think any of us are on this podcast. It's a little bit ridiculous, honestly. Yeah, the kid didn't develop like everybody thought he would. But Alex, you were at the football game with me his freshman year, and we beat Tennessee. I remember specifically that entire fan base that night talking about him the exact same way everybody is talking about Ryan Helinski now.
Yep.
You remember that, Alex?
Oh,
absolutely. There's no question.
He was the savior of the program. So, yep. what I'm waiting on is how fast is this toxic fan base that we've turned into turn on Ryan Helinski when he doesn't perform to an All-American standard that we've unfairly put on him as a fan base? How fast does that happen next year when Luke Doty is waiting in the wings and Joyner has another year's experience underneath his belt? That's my hypothetical question here. I mean, some of y'all on Twitter need to get a grip, man. Get a grip. I didn't mean to go on a rant,
I think Twitter just needs to get a grip.
I didn't mean to go on a rant there, but those are some thoughts I've been holding in the last couple weeks, and it's just gotten. And I'd be saying this if it was any kid in our football team. I've never seen a kid get hurt before, a South Carolina kid get hurt before, and then there's fans out there when it comes out that he's actually pretty seriously injured, there's still fans out there coming out and making smart-ass remarks about the kid's performance. Like, what did he do to hurt you so bad that you got to bash him on Twitter every day of your life?
And not only, bashing his performance, but, implying that we as a program or he as a player might be faking it.
Yeah,
just so that we could get Helinski in. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
those of you that think that need to really check yourselves, because that young man has given his heart and soul to this program, and you can tell that just by the way he carried himself on the sideline on Saturday in a lopsided victory. Yeah. He has given everything that he's got to us, and we deserve to give him back.
And all reports accounted that he was in every single quarterbacks meeting last week getting ready for Charleston Southern. They had extra quarterbacks meetings that he didn't necessarily have to go to. He was at those just to help those young guys get ready to play. So,
yeah,
don't act like he hasn't been a great Gamecock for us and hasn't given us – yeah, it hasn't worked out the way we maybe thought it would, dating back to how he played his freshman year. But guess what, guys? That's sports. Stuff happens. People don't develop the way you think they will. It happens all the time. Jake Bentley's not the first guy. He won't be the last. Okay? I mean, it unnerves me how some of these people talk about him and have treated him the last couple years just because he hasn't played up to their ridiculous Heisman football standard. It's insane.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
pathetic. It is what it is. It's absolutely pathetic.
I agree.
Sorry, I'm done.
All right. Well, then let's wrap this thing up and look forward to, I don't know, a positive experience against Alabama come Saturday.
I'm still calling it. I called it in the preseason. We're going to beat them on Saturday.
All right, then.
They can buy it.
You heard it right here.
I didn't call an Alabama victory, but I'm still sticking by my Georgia prediction that we beat them in Athens. Just saying.
Okay. I mean, I'll take either one of those, but...
Yeah, I'll take both, actually.
Yep, both.
Why don't we just throw Clemson in there while we're at it?
Bam.
Yeah, and the rest of the schedule.
There we go.
Sounds good
to
me.
Lose the first game. Go 10-1.
11-1. We play 12 games now.
Whatever.
Hey, math just... is hard. All right, let's wrap this thing up. Let's close it down.
Gentlemen, thank you as always. It's a pleasure doing stuff with you guys, and I hope that we are back to report with you. A win against the Crimson Tide next week. Next time, same bat time, same bat channel. Thank you for making us a part of your day. Drive safe, go Cox. Don't ever forget to tip your waitress.